32 years were already passed, and again another 32 years had to be lived Prajapati with severe discipline, self-control, and aspiration. After 32 years of disciplined life at the abode of Prajapati, he is given a fresh instruction. What is reflected in the eye or reflected in water may not be the Atman for the reason you have already mentioned. Now I introduce you into a greater reality, which is unaffected by the conditions of the physical body. That has to be regarded as the Atman, because if the doubt is that the so-called Atman, about which instruction has been received, is affected by physical character, then naturally what is not so affected should be regarded as the Atman. So he is now introduced into an experience which is not conditioned by the characters of the physical body. In this connection, Prajapati speaks. Ya esha swapne mahiyamanas charati, esha atmeti ho vacha, etad amritam, etad abhayam, etad brahma. This is the Atman, this is the Brahman about which I am going to speak to you, which you see in the state of dream. That being which glories, rejoices and is happy in the state of dream is the Atman, which is fearless, which is immortal. This is the reality about which I had spoken earlier and into which you seek initiation. Well, to some extent there is a satisfaction of all the doubts. The physical body does not affect the conditions in dream. So Indra was satisfied tentatively. Yes, this must be so. So he went back. Saha shanta hridayah parvavraja, cool, calm, composed in heart, Indra went. Saha apratyeva devan etad bhayam dadarsha. But Indra was blessed with the capacity to ratiocinate and investigate into what he understood. On the way, before he reached home, reached his palace in the city, in heaven, he had a doubt in his own mind. How could this be? He thought within himself. That which is in dream is the Atman. Can it be like that? Of course. He argued within himself in this manner. Yadyapi idam shariram andham bhavati anandhasa bhavati yadisramam asramo naiva esha asya dosheda dosya divas. He thought within himself, if the body is blind, the dream person need not be blind. And if the bodily individual has any other defect, such as crippleness, etc., this defect does not affect the dreaming individual, no doubt. Perhaps even if the physical body is amputated, cut off, or affected very seriously, the dreaming individual is not so affected. Navadhe nasya hanyate, nasya sramyena sramuho, granti tu eva enam. Now he has another doubt. Even if it be like this, there is some other defect in dream. One is not always perfect in dream. The point whether the physical body affects the dream individual or not is irrelevant. What is pertinent here is that the dreaming individual has the same problems as the waking individual. There is the same pleasure and pain dependent on unreliable factors. One feels as if one is chased or driven away or being killed, even in dream. Granti tu eva eram vichayayanti eva apriya veta eva. One feels sorrow, grief, and passes through unpleasant experiences even in dream. Can this be the Atman? Naturally, it cannot be the one because it is not perfect. It is affected by the same changes to which the waking life is subject. One cries, one weeps, one sobs, one has every blessed, painful experience in dream also. Roditiva, nāmatra bhogyam paśyāmi. This is no good. This dreaming Atman is no good. He thought within himself halfway and went back to Prajapati. Sa samitpāṇi punareyāya, again with the sacred firewood he approaches Prajapati as a humble disciple. This is the third time. Tamha Prajapati ruvācha maghavan yat śāntahṛdaya pravarāji kimicchan punarāgamah. You went away satisfied, Indra. Now again you have come. What is wrong? Saho vācha tat yadyapidam bhagavah śarīramandham bhavati anandhasya bhavati yadisrāmam asvāmo asrāmah naiva esha asya doshena tuṣyati vate nāsya hanyate nāsya srāmena srāmo grantitve vayinam vichhādayantīva apriyavettaiva bhavati api roditiva nāhamatra bhogyam paśyāmi. So he mentioned once again all the doubts. This dreaming individual is no good at all. That dreaming person is always sorry, affected in a serious manner, like the waking one. And it has even the experience of destruction, death, etc. What is the good of this Atman? So I have come with a doubt. Please teach me the proper Atman. Esha maghavannitiho vacha etam tvevate bhuyo anuvyakhyasyami vasaparani dvatrim shadam varshani. Again 32 years. You stay here, a life of discipline. Let me see if I can tell you something different from this Atma. So this is the third time that he is asked to live like this. And Indra must have been a tenacious person, no doubt, to stay like this for the sake of the great knowledge which he sought, by the acquisition of which he aspired for mastery over all the worlds and fulfillment of every kind of desire. Saha aparani dvatrimshatam varshanyuvasa. So Indra, according to the injunction of Prajapati, stayed there in the abode for another 32 years, living a life of intense discipline, austerity, tapascharya. Tasmai sahovacha. After these 32 years, Prajapati speaks again. Now I tell you something different. I point out an Atman which is not affected by the physical body and not conditioned by the sorrows of dream, which is blessed in its own state. What is that? That which one is in the deep sleep state, that is the Atman. Tat yatra etat suptah samasta samprasannah svapnam na vijanati esha atmeti hovacha etat amrtam Abhayam etat brahma. This is the immortal. This is the fearless. This is the Atman. What? Which one? That which is in the state of deep sleep. Now that which is in the state of deep sleep has no experience of sorrow of any kind. He does not feel that it is affected by anything. He does no grief. He does not feel that it dies. So in a sense it is okay. The sleeping state is a state of freedom from all the turmoils of physical and psychic life in the waking and the dreaming states. So listening to this instruction of Prajapati, Indra was satisfied for the time being. Yes, this must be so. Saha shanta hridaya paravraja. So Indra left Prajapati's abode back home thinking that he knew the Atman. But on the way he had again doubts. He did not reach home. Saha apratya devan etat bhayam dadarsha. He had great fear. What sort of Atman is this that is in sleep? It is as if it is not there at all. It is a zero, a nihil, a negation of all things. This is the Atman, a darkness which knows neither itself nor anybody else. What kind of Atman is this? So such doubts arose in his mind. Naha khalu ayam evam samprati atmanam janati ayam ahamasmiti no eva imani bhutani. A thing that neither knows its own self nor others. What kind of thing is it? This is the sleep. Neither it knows that it is, nor does it know that anything else is. It is like complete annihilation of self as it were. Can this be the Atman? Self-annihilation? How could this be the Atman? This was the doubt in the mind of Indra. Vinasham eva apito bhoti nahamatra bhogyam pashyami. This kind of Atman is no good. An Atman which does not know its own self, what sort of Atman is this? With this doubt, he went back to Prajapati. Sa samvitpani punareyaya. Again with the sacred fuel he went to Prajapati. I am here as a disciple once again. Tamha prajapatiruvacha madhavan yat shanta hridaya pravrajihi kimichchan punaragama. Indra, why have you come back again? Because you have gone satisfied after receiving my instruction. Saho vacha. Indra speaks. Naha khalu ayam bhagavaha evam sampratyatmanam janati. This Atman that you spoke about me, spoke to me about, does not know anything at all. It is an ignorant Atman. Ayam ahamasmi ki nova imani bhutani vinashameva apita bhavati ki namatram bhogyam pashyami. This is a state of apparent self-annihilation. I cannot believe that this is the Atman. Will you kindly teach me the real Atman? Eva me vaisha maghavan niti ho vacha etam tueva te bhuyaha anuvyakhyasyami no eva anyatra asmat vasaparani panchavarshani. Another 5 years of discipline is necessary. So stay here for another 5 years. So 101 years of tapas did Indra perform in the abode of Prajapati for the sake of this great knowledge. So Indra, according to this advice of the great master, lived there again for 5 years with intense discipline and sought initiation again. Tani ekashatam sampeduhu etat yadahuhu ekashatam avai sarvani maghava prajapato brahmacharya mubasa. People say, look, Indra lived for 101 years. Even now people say, Indra, such a powerful person, a brilliant intellect, such a person had to live a life of tremendous austerity for 101 years for the sake of this knowledge, what to speak of other people, how much discipline is necessary, how much preparation is called for, and what intense austerity has to precede this seeking of knowledge from a teacher. So people say even now about this greatness of knowledge and the need for the requisite preparation for the reception of this knowledge, it cannot come like that so easily. After these preparations on the part of Indra, he is having completed 101 years of tremendous tapas, Prajapati speaks the final truth about things. Maghavan, martyam va idam shariram, attam mrityuna. Indra, listen to me. This body is perishable. It is enveloped, overwhelmed by death from every side. How could this be the atma? The physical body is subject to death and transformation, a matter known to everyone. So is the state of the psychic individuality also. The mind is not in any way better than the body, as far as it is equally finite, limited, and conditioned in the same way as the body is. The limitation of personality to space, time, and exclusiveness of oneself from other individuals is similar, whether it is in the case of the physical body or the psychic personality. So this individuality is subject to death. So anything that is visible, individual, particular, finite, cannot be the Atman. So neither the body nor the mind can be the Atman. Not the waking individual, not the dreaming individual, neither of these. Not also the state of deep sleep as it is experienced by us. Because it is a causal condition which engenders the experiences of the mind through dream and waking. It is a potential seed which contains the seed of life in the form of these experiences in dream and waking. Hence, being the mother of this phenomenal experience here, it cannot be regarded as out of touch with phenomenality. The Atman is neither an individual conscious of itself as a person, nor is it an unconscious state. It is something quite different. It is not personality consciousness. It is also not non-consciousness. Then what sort of consciousness can it be? Can anyone imagine what sort of awareness it is where one is not aware of an individuality of oneself, nor one is not unaware of anything? Such a thing is the Atman about which you have to know. It is not the body because it is characterized by change, transformation, which is equivalent to death. Martyam va idam shariram, attam mrityuna. No one can escape death as long as one has a body. Tadasya amrtasya asharirasya atmanah adhishthanam. This body is nothing but a vehicle of the for the manifestation of this immortal bodiless atma. This body manifests one degree of the reality of the Atma. That is true. In that sense, it is a receptacle, as it were, of this consciousness, which is the Atma. The immortal is capable of being inferred its existence through the functions of the body, but it is not identical with the body. Thus, this physical experience, the mortal life that we are living here, is incompatible with the immortal life of the Atma. But it is the vehicle, in the sense that it has characters in itself by which we can proceed to the nature of the Atman gradually by the logical process of induction, as it were. Though it is the vehicle, it is not identical. Atto vai sashariraha priya priya bhyam. Anyone who has a body, whatever that body be, physical or psychic, cannot escape being conditioned by the vicissitudes of pleasure and pain. There is no use exulting in pleasure, because it is not going to be there permanently. There is always the undercurrent of the future sorrow, even at the time of the experience of the present so-called happiness. So there is a transitory wind blowing in the form of happiness in this world. So is the case with the sorrow of life. No one can escape the clutches of pleasure and pain as long as one lives in this finite body. Atto vai sashariraha priya priya bhyam. Naha vai sashariraasya sataha priya priyayo rapahati rasti. No one can be free as long as one has a body. So freedom is a chimera. As long as there is bodily individuality, one has to pass through these ruts of pleasure and pain, these transitory experiences of life, as long as one is content to be in this body. The body we are speaking of is not necessarily this body here on earth. It may be any body of any realm of existence. It may be even a body in paradise, it is subject to destruction, because it is also in space and time of a different order. It is, after all, characterized by finitude. And what is finitude? It is the consciousness of something being outside oneself and something limiting one's own being. This is the fate of everyone who has a body. And no one who has a body can be free at any time, in any manner whatsoever. Ashariram vavasantam na priya priyes prashataha. But these difficulties do not arise when the body has vanished and there is a bodiless existence being experienced. It is impossible to conceive what bodiless existence is. It is beyond the conception of the mind, because of the fact that the mind is only a handmaid of bodily experiences. It simply okays what the body wants, what the body clamors for, what the senses speak. Whatever the mind thinks is in terms of body. So how could the mind imagine what is bodiless? It has to stand on its own head, which is impossible. So the injunction of Prajapati that the bodiless existence is free from the vicissitudes of pleasure and pain cannot easily be made intelligible to the mind that is affected by the cognitions of bodily existence. But here is the truth. The Atman is bodiless, which does not mean that it is ethereal abstraction. This doubt in the mind which is likely to arise that freedom from body is equal to ethereal abstraction is due to the misconceptions arising consequent upon the habits of the mind. The Atman is not an abstraction from the physical existence. What Atman is, the mind cannot think for simple reasons. The reason is that we are used to imagine that physical bodies are substantives which have qualities, characters inherent in them. We can never for a moment think that the substantive can be other than a physical body. Because whatever we think is physical, even if we close our eyes and imagine something non-physical with the stretch of our imagination, it cannot be non-physical because it will be located in space and time. That is the very meaning of physicality. So, there is no such thing as a non-physical thinking, and thus the Atman cannot be thought. That is the reason also we cannot imagine as to what this bodiless existence means. The bodiless existence of the Atman is not the divesting of reality in any manner whatsoever in respect of what is true. It is freedom and not the negation of anything which was already there once and now has gone out of being. It is like gaining of health from a condition of disease. An impersonality of state, impersonality of condition, an impersonality of experience. The so-called body or the physical atmosphere is a finitization of this impersonal being. Can we say, to give only a very gross, intelligible example, that a lump of ice, which is finite in its bodily being, is in any way superior to the causes out of which it has come into existence? The ice is nothing but a solidified form of water. Water is more general in its pervasion than this limited form of ice. But even water has a cause behind it. And we cannot say that the water is superior to its cause in any manner whatsoever. You may say, chemically speaking, hydrogen and oxygen. Can you say that they are inferior in their contents to the manifestation you have what called water or ice? But even these gases are not ultimate causes. They are again manifestations chemically of something superior, of a more electrical character, you may say, or something still superior, more unthinkable even. Merely because something is unthinkable, it does not become abstract in the sense of a non-real existence. The more is the capacity of our mind to conceive causes, the more will we be able to understand the nature of the Atman. Why it looks abstract is because it is generalized and it is universal. Space is, in a sense, an impersonal existence. It has no finite form in the sense of a body that we see with physical eyes. But it cannot be said, even physically speaking, that space or ether is divested of the realities of the physical earth or fire or air or water. We are told that the contents of the earth can be withdrawn by way of sublimation into the causes thereof, so that they become liquids and gases which can all be absorbed into the so-called ether, which is not a negation of physical substances but a very ethereal, impersonal existence of everything that we call physical. Some such thing happens when we enter into the consciousness of the impersonal Atman. Because of this impersonality of being, it cannot be affected by anything, because anything which can affect something else has to be other than that which it affects, and other than that nothing is. So this seems to be the implication of the great injunction of Prajapati. Indra may understand it or not, but this is the fact. Ashariraha vayuhu. Can I give you some examples to make you understand? Indra, says Prajapati, air has no body. It is not affected by pleasure and pain. In a sense, it is bodiless, because it is not located to some particular place. It is not attached to any particular body. It is just a free movement, as it were, that is air. The lightnings in the sky are also of an impersonal character to some extent. The clouds are also of an impersonal character. The thunder is also of an impersonal character. Ashariraha vayu abhram vidyutu stanayitnuhu. Ashariraani eva etani yatha etani avushmad akashat samuthaya param jyoti upasampadya svena rupena abhinishpadyanti. These clouds will vanish into space. They get absorbed into space. Wind also ceases and gets identified with space when it is heated up by the light of the sun. These movements of wind, the falling of water as rain, and every phenomena that we see in atmosphere, all these are capable of being lost in space ultimately under given conditions. They go to their sources. They arose from their cause and they go back to their cause. Space is the ultimate cause of every physical element. By space we do not mean emptiness, but the most subtle impersonal state of physical existence. So everything goes back to its cause, which is the universal ether. And everything rises from that universal ether. So is the case with all this creation. It has arisen, as it were, from this universal Atman. And it goes back to this universal Atman. Evameva esha samprasada asmat charirat samuthaya param jyoti rupasampadya svena rupena abhinishpadyati. Just as finite objects get lost in the impersonal causes from where they have come, so is this being, having risen from this bodily existence, attains to the immortal state, brilliant in nature, shining as the original consciousness which it is originally. This is the most serene condition of one's own self. We are not serene or composed merely because there are no sounds and there are no contacts. Serenity or composure, which is real freedom, the experience which is free from every kind of sorrow or limitedness, is not to be had either in waking or in dream or in sleep. One has to rise above these three states. The physical, the subtle and the causal conditions are limitations of the Atma. The three states, waking, dream and sleep, are the three conditions to which the consciousness of the Atman is apparently subject and due to which one appears to be an individual. One has to rise up from these limited embodiments. You have to rise up from the waking physical experience. You have to rise above the limitations of even the mind which works in dream. And we have to rise above the limitations of even sleep. Then it is that we become true being. True being is not unconscious. It is not a mind. It is not a body. It is not a cause. It is not the subtle manifest condition. It is not also a physical body. It is supreme luminosity, param jyoti. It is the light of all lights. It is not a light like the light of the sun, but it is self-luminous being. It is a light which does not illumine something else other than itself. It is self-luminous in the sense that it illumines its own self. When we say that it illumines its own self, it does not mean that it is ignorant of the existence of others. It is the self of all beings. It is not the self of one person or two persons or of one individual or a group of individuals. The word self is an abused term. So is the term Atman due to the limitations of language. We are always accustomed to use the term self in respect of individuals, myself, yourself, himself, herself, itself, etc. This is not the way we have to use the word self. It is not this self or that self we are referring to. It is the selfhood which is the true being of everything that is. So self-luminosity does not mean the luminosity of any particular self in the sense of a body. Because we have already made it clear that the self is not a body. So to bring it once again in association with a body for the purpose of the interpretation of the meaning of the self would be a travesty of affairs. So self-luminosity is a universal luminosity. It is not luminosity of an individuality. Why is it universal luminosity? Because it is the self of everything. It is the selfhood of everything that is anywhere. So it is a comprehensive luminosity of a universal selfhood. Such is the true being of yours, Indra, into which you seek initiation. Esha samprasadaha, this is the true serenity, composure of the self. Asma sharira samuthaya param jyoti rupasampadya svera rupena avinishpadyate. You have to stand by your own right. You have to assume your real status. This is freedom. This is called Atma Swarajya, the freedom of the self. We are not in our own status. We do not enjoy our status when we are in the physical body. You know very well how much slavishness is there in bodily individuality. The conditions of the body which are the outcome of the way in which the physical laws of nature work, are conditioning us. We are very sorry, very unhappy in this world indeed. We are not secure on account of subjection to body and its laws. Nor are we happy merely because we have a mind, because the mind is a slave of the body in all its cognitions. So that too is not going to be our guide. What is the good of this sleeping condition? It is as good as a nihil, as Indra himself pointed out. So none of these states through which we pass can be of any value for us. We are nothing, either in waking or dream or sleep. We are just nobodies, drifting like puppets controlled by strings, operated by somebody whose existence we cannot understand. So true status is freedom from every kind of external subjection to any kind of law outside. And this can be attained only when the so-called outside does not exist. As long as there is outsideness, the law of the outside will operate. Thus, there is no freedom except in a state of universality. There is no freedom as long as there is a body. This is the great truth, Indra. This is the Atman. Now you understand what the Atman is. Sa uttamah purushaha, this is the supreme person, if you would call it a person. It is not a person. We call it a person only by way of expression, explanation for the purpose of the understanding of the immature mind. It is the supreme being. That is how we can translate this term. Sa uttamah purushaha. Superior to the transitory purushas, we have the universal purusha. The word uttama purusha we come across even in the Bhagavad Gita in the 15th chapter, for instance, where we are told there are two purushas, the Akshara and the Akshara, and there is a third supreme one, the Purushottama or the Uttama Purusha, which means to say there is something transcending both the perishable universe and the imperishable immanent consciousness, namely the Absolute Being. Sa Uttama Purushaha Satatra Pariyeti Jatchan Kridan Ramamanaha Stri Viruva Yanairuva Jnati Viruva Nopajanam Smaran Nidam Shariram Sayatha Prayogya Acharane Yuktaha Eva Meva Ayam Asmin Sharire Prano Yukta. These descriptions are supposed to be those pertaining to the life of spiritual freedom, sometimes called Jivan Mukti, in the usual language of the Vedanta philosophy. There is something known as Jivan Mukti, which means spiritual attainment or liberation, even when the body is there apparently. There are umpteen descriptions of what Jivan Mukti is, because the Jivan Mukta himself does not give the description. It is given by others. Therefore, the limitation of these definitions. It is held by people that the so-called existence of the body of the Jivan Mukta is from the point of view of others who see him and not from his own point of view. This is one way of looking at it. we cannot say whether he himself is aware of the body or not. But others see. So, as long as others see the movement and the existence of the body of that individual is supposed to be a mukta with a body. That is why he is called Jivan Mukta. Others are of opinion that he may also be aware of his own physical existence in a different way altogether from what we feel in respect of our own selves. The consciousness of the existence of a body is not necessarily an evil, provided it is experienced in the proper perspective. It is ignorance that is the cause of bondage and not merely the existence of this thing or that thing. So the mere presence of the body may not be a bondage, provided it is known in its reality. This again is a very difficult thing to grasp, what it is to know a thing in reality. No one can explain these things unless one goes to the state personally. And no one can understand it also unless one enters its state. It is usually held that one experiences in this condition of Jivan Mukti a tremendous freedom of attainment and achievement. What sort of freedom it is? It is not a freedom to do anything that one likes in the sense of a license given to an immature individual. It is a freedom that comes on account of a knowledge of the depths of everything. Not only a knowledge in the sense of an ordinary accumulation of facts by logical knowledge, but an insight into the nature of reality by identity of being. To understand as to what the behavior of this person would be in respect of others, we have only to imagine for a time being what would be our attitude towards the thing in respect of which we have established identity of existence. It is impossible to conceive it as long as we have not experienced it. But to the stretch of imagination, we can to some extent feel what that state could be. How do we feel in respect of a thing with which we are one? What is our attitude towards it? Well, neither one of attachment nor one of repulsion, neither one of like nor one of dislike, but a complete mastery over it. This is the characterization of that state where one is in identity with everything and yet is not attached to that thing or is not repulsed by that thing. The freedom that one experiences in a state of Jivan Mukti is therefore one of complete mastery born of identity of being and not a mastery in the sense of control of one person by another person, etc., etc., as we see in this world. It is not the exercise of power of one in respect of another. It is the exuberance of the abundance of power, which is inseparable from universality of being ultimately, where power becomes one with being itself. So this is something very enigmatic, very difficult to grasp ordinarily, but it is nothing but the difficulty in explaining God Himself. It is God being that we are describing when we speak of Jivan Mukti, an embodiment so-called, which becomes the vehicle of God experience in this world itself. Such is Jivan Mukti, about which Prajapati is speaking in this passage. Hari Om Tat Sat.